Call the meeting to order. It's first order of business is a few introductions, and we'll have Ms. Cornwell can take care of that for us.
Today we have Alexis Williams from McCormick Taylor, and then Josh Thomas is here from Delta if we have any transportation questions.
Okay.
And of course, our wonderful mapping and IT staff are here just in case there's any issues.
Wonderful. Is the economic development person coming today?
He is.
Okay. He's on his way?
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
He's aware of the public comment in the beginning.
Excellent. Excellent. Good. All right. Our next agenda item is a public comment. This is the public's first opportunity today to speak on any subject regarding the land use plan that you would like, any element, any comments at all. Would be greatly appreciated. There'll also be a public comment period at the end of our meeting around 1:30 this afternoon. So who would like to go first? Okay, Mr. Kenton.
I must get out of here early.
Yeah, yeah. We would like also like you to sign in. There's a sign-in sheet there if you would be so kind as to sign in. So the
I'm Dave Kenton from Milford, and I'm a commercial realty with Sotheby's down in Rehoboth. And I've got some questions. Hopefully, it's about the obviously it's about the Route 1 corridor. And I guess my question is infrastructure districts. I heard Jennifer Cohan talking on the radio the other day, and she said, obviously, I'm getting a roundabout way here, that I'm working hard on the Brittingham Farm, which is 120 acres at the southwest corner of Route 16 and Route 1, where they're proposing an overpass and are proposing sewer and water. And that property right now is zoned AR1, and obviously you can't apply to get the comprehensive land use plan changed until DelDOT gives you a letter of non-objection about getting on the property on Route 1, which makes sense. The only problem is that DelDOT's getting ready on the southwest corner to put a major overpass and widen the roads, so the entire frontage of the Brittingham property has been confiscated by the state. And the only way you can get onto that property is a right turn in, which nobody really wants, and it's limited to a residential entrance for like 50 or 60 trips a day. So what I'm trying to do is find a way to establish an infrastructure district in that area around the new overpass and the new where Artesian's getting ready to put sewer there and Woodfield Preserve's getting ready to develop. That area is going to be an area of obvious development, but there's a lot of opposition to doing more things along both sides of Route 1. So I wanted to make my comments. I have a vested interest, of course, but there are between the Five Points intersection and the Route 16 intersection, it's about 4.7 miles. And of those areas, on both sides of the roads, there's about six properties that are in farmland preservation. So the people that say, well, gosh, you guys want to pave all the way to Milford, you know, my feeling is there's a lot. If you take a look at the map, there's farmland preservation with Tom Robinson, farmland preservation with Henry Sharp, and there's farmland preservation with various people along those areas. So my thought was the comprehensive plan, from my point of view, ought to be like the old one in the 70s, which was from Rehoboth all the way to Five Points. 500 feet in could be considered. It didn't have to be, but could be considered for future commercial. And I'm afraid, you know, if all the NIMBYs get after us after the defeat at Trout Daniels at the Cave Neck Road, I'm afraid that they'll all try to restrict all kinds of commercial up and down both sides of Route 1, and I don't think that's a good policy. I think that over the years, the state and PLUS and everybody has said, if we're going to put in infrastructure, which is an overpass and sewer and water, that area probably needs to be set for development. But we can't ask you all to put that in the comprehensive plan because DelDOT has not given us an entrance there. So when I heard Jennifer Cohan say, if you apply and become an infrastructure district, then the county has not control over us, but will tell us where they want the transportation infrastructure to go. So my slant is to try to get the area significantly around the Rookery Golf Course in that area in an infrastructure district such that the county council would approve in the future a possibility for future commercial in that area. And I'm just afraid if nothing happens, the time is going to go by. It's going to get to the next year, you guys are going to sign off on the comp plan, and then nothing will ever be able to go there forever. And so my point is that, you know, I mean, once the comp plan says that that's AR1, it can never, you know, the law is not going to let us change it. So my question is there such a thing as an infrastructure district? And if there is one, you know, what do I need to know to get into it?
Well, I guess with TIDs, you know, so we kind of haven't gotten to that yet as a commission, as part of the plan. Uh-huh. That'll probably be, I would imagine, in the future land use and the mobility elements. So we haven't gotten to that yet. But I don't know that, I'm not sure, I don't know one way or the other whether the commission's going to say that a TID should go here or there. It would be whether the commission sort of says we should explore TIDs.
Yeah, I would think that, you know, the comprehensive land use plan is a plan and a guideline, and certainly and before somebody jumps up, yes, we understand that the maps have the force of law. We get that. It's all good. But the plan itself is a guideline, it's an important guideline. What I would anticipate is that the plan would more likely lean toward the exploration, supporting the exploration and the establishment of such districts, but wouldn't actually do the establishing. In other words, that would have to come later on. Because the plan's broad, it's like, you know, the plan needs to be supported by the ordinances. The plan really isn't an ordinance. We're not going to be drilling down to the specifics of where, you know, exactly where those areas should go. And that whole issue is still being rather hotly debated.
So if you sign the comprehensive plan and the TIDs aren't quite worked out, it could be done later.
You have 18 months after the plan's adopted to establish the maps and so on.
Great.
I think that's right. Isn't that right, Andy?
Yeah.
And so on. And that's the point at which the rubber's going to meet the road. The whole issue with TIDs, how they're worked out, how they're established, and all that is still the subject of a great deal of discussion. So I don't know, you know, what.
There's an interrelated part of that too, though. You know, we're going to be looking at the maps. We started to a little bit, I guess it was the last workshop. Mm-hmm. You know, so setting aside the TIDs or the improvement districts, you know, we're going to look at where the developing areas are. You know, town centers, the rural areas, and all that sort of thing, as they are in our 2008 plan and where they should be in our 2018 plan. So, you know, obviously those kind of also go hand in hand a little bit. You're not going to put a TID out in a rural area. So, we're going to look at where infrastructure is going and what's appropriate for mapping, too.
And to your point, at the intersection you're speaking of, if DelDOT's planning to put, you know, major transportation improvements there, then logic would tell you that it's likely that's going to be where the development is, because you want to have things where it's easy for people to get on and off the highway without disrupting the other traffic,
Roger. I think that's a good suggestion, and I'm really glad you feel that way. But I just keep feeling, with all the pressure you're getting from the people moving in, to not, you know, pave all the way to Milford. I don't want to pave all the way to Milford either, but I do want to leave some 500 foot strips along Route 1 for future development. And I'm just afraid. You can tell it. I'm afraid, like you were saying, if the comprehensive land use plan gets signed and you are AR1 in there, I would think that the people could always come in and say you could never be anything else.
Yeah, just because you're AR1 doesn't prohibit you from you know, seeking to develop the land, to seeking to have the zoning change and so on. But I understand where you're coming from, and I think that's important, and we'll. And that's why it's important for you to be here sharing your feelings with us, which we appreciate very much, because it's really, it's everybody's plan. It's not our plan. We're doing this plan for all of you.
Okay? Great.
All of you. So
there's a lot of different and diverse people.
I guarantee you that no one's going to be 100% happy when we're done.
Okay? Okay.
And quite honestly, if everybody's mad, we've probably done a pretty good job.
Thanks for that explanation. I appreciate it. I just want to make sure that somebody's looking out for some areas of Route 1, because when I look up Route 1, it looks to me like the Trout Daniels place thing is going to be off limits, and everything's off limits, and then it's only 4 miles to the next intersection. And I've always been told, well, if they're not going to improve the intersection, you're not going to get anything. But now that DelDOT has said we're going to improve, do a separated grade at 16. So we went out and worked with Dawn Adams, who is the executor of the Brittingham Farm, and she can't even get on the property because she owns 400 feet. But to get that overpass there, they've got to widen the merge lanes. And all her land, her access land to that property, has been essentially cut off by DelDOT. And we can't get on any other way. And I'm just afraid that if the comp plan gets signed off, we'll be stuck. Or she'll be stuck. We'll all be stuck. So that's, you answered my question, and I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming today.
Okay,
who's next? Who else would like to speak today? Sure, come on up. If you would, sign in when you get there, and then give us your name, and you may have the floor.
Thank you very much, sir. Dean Holden with Chesapeake Utilities. I'm here this morning.
Good.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks for coming.
We've got a short little presentation that we'll run through this morning. Do I have a button here? We'll touch upon Chesapeake Utilities and who we are, give you a quick little snapshot of some natural gas technologies, who we are serving now. More importantly, we'll get to how our efforts align with your comprehensive planning efforts currently and how we see some of those efforts occurring as we move forward. So Chesapeake Utilities is a diversified energy company. We're headquartered in Dover, originally from Dover. With a focus on safety, we're very proud of our safety record. Safety ends up being our first priority. Chesapeake is made up of a number of different business units, some of which I'm sure you're familiar with, Shark Propane, here in your footprint. Chesapeake Utilities is also your local distribution company for natural gas. And Eastern Shore Natural Gas is the transmission company that runs north and south through Delaware. We have a bunch of other entities, a lot of energy utilities in Florida, electric and gas. Most recent is Aspire Energy, which is out in Ohio, and we do a little bit of midstream collection and transmission of natural gas there. So in Delaware, who we serve with local distribution gas, we serve from Cecil County all the way down to Ocean City and everywhere in Delaware below the canal. Eastern Shore, a separate business unit of Chesapeake, provides the high pressure transmission mains that run north-south, and this image gives you a snapshot of that. If you follow in the news, you may be aware that Eastern Shore has recently gotten FERC approval to build some upgraded transmission, which we've been asking for some time. They were held up and slowed down in that process about a year, but they are now in construction. So more importantly here for Sussex County, this gives you a snapshot for where our gas mains are currently. And that is the pink color you see. Effectively serving anywhere in the blue is where we can effectively get gas main to now relatively easily and quickly. The green shows you where we'd really like to be able to serve over the next 5 years. And then ultimately, we are eager to be able to serve anybody in the county, any potential load in the county. Within Delaware, over the last 6 or so years, we've been growing at about a 2.7% growth rate. This gives you a little snapshot of who our customers are, primarily residential, although in the industrial commercial sector, we serve quite a bit of agriculture and quite a bit of industrial. We do a lot of work with the poultry integrators and the crop management after cropping, with grain dryers being a large component of that. In Delaware, we work with the PSC. The PSC governs our activities, and we've got a few unique regulatory provisions that the PSC has granted us. We've got an expansion area rate that allows us to build into the eastern portion of Sussex, where the economics that we're held to are more challenging for us. And we're allowed to do negotiated rates for very large, big volume users to make it more economical for industry or big commercial operations to get underway. We like to promote alternative and new technology for gas. Two examples that we've got here in Sussex County. Seaford High School installed a combined heat and power unit that allows them to cool in the summer heat in the winter and produce their own electricity. They had some challenging electric prices and electric stability, and so that's helped them with that. We also worked with Delaware Tech Community College to put in gas heat pumps, very similar to the Mitsubishi splitless duct systems that you have, but it's just a gas-driven heat pump, and so they perform very well in the wintertime, and it also utilizes natural gas, so it gives you a very efficient, economical way to heat and cool. This is a neat slide, and this is just Sussex County, and it gives you a snapshot since 2010. Conversions that we have done, and these are more of the larger poultry integrators are a big component of this, but we've been able to save about $11 million over the last 2010, over the last 7 years through conversions to natural gas.
Who was using all the number six? What kind of facility? I mean, that stuff is nasty.
I don't know that answer, but I can tell you some of the ones that I know that still do. There are some large education complexes that do, okay. And I know we had some poultry integrators that had all of which I couldn't tell you.
That would make sense.
And it's a challenge now. The few that are still left on number six, it's hard to get. You know, even if you're and very polluting.
Yeah. And you have to heat it up to get it to flow if it's less than 40 degrees outside or 50 degrees outside.
It's a challenge.
It's just not good, yeah. So I'm glad to see it's going away. Good.
So how do we align our efforts with the efforts that the county is going through? And so understanding your comp plan and where you're going with that is very important to us. Understanding where we want to place infrastructure, understanding where the commercial industrial needs are for that infrastructure, to be able to both support economic development and growth where you want it, and also to be able to preserve the natural resources that we have here in the county. And so we're very keen to be able to work with you on that, and we also think that that piped natural gas works very much in line with those goals. We're very aware that a lot of municipalities view natural gas as a key component for economic development. We've had some wonderful conversations with the county administrator, Mr. Lawson. We've met with Mr. Medlars and are working very hard to bring natural gas in through the King Farm and the Sussex Industrial Park, which I think is a great acquisition for the county here recently. And that brings us to the challenge that we have is we're held by the PSC to extend when committed customers, those that have applied and committed to connect to natural gas, will pay for the cost of that expansion. And so we're not allowed to expand based upon the hope of what growth is going to occur or even the new developments that we know are coming. Until they commit, we're not allowed to make that expansion. And so the challenge that we have is the economics and meeting that economic test.
Let me repeat to you in everyday words what you just said and make sure that that's what it means. Mm. So what this means is that the Public Service Commission will not permit you to run a gas line in anticipation of customers.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's correct, unless they're committed customers.
Right. So if there's an area that's designated for industrial development, mm-hmm. you really can't do anything until there's someone there willing to buy your gas.
Correct. And they more specifically, they would say we can't have our ratepayers pay for that expansion. And,
Does this sound dumb to anybody else, or is it just me? I mean, really. I mean, I understand it's not your issue, but I'm just but I want folks to know this is the kind of stuff we have to deal with. Okay, we can't just make a plan. We have to deal with the realities that you know and the constraints that are placed upon us by stuff like this. But anyway, keep going.
It is a challenge that we are keenly aware of, and we work on ways to mitigate it. And so, you know, we look to alternate funding mechanisms. There's the VW grant funding coming out. There's money from Delmarva-Exelon merger. And then in other cases, we work with the developer, whether it be the county or a private developer, to bridge the gap in that cost. And figure out a way that cost can be paid back as new connections come on. And so we work to find the alternate methods. And that's a key piece for us in working with the county on how can we get gas where you're going to need gas and work within the constraints that we're dealt.
I know from looking at your map, you serve a number of jurisdictions. Do you have any success stories you might be able to share with us about how there was either a public partnership or a public-private partnership that worked out in order to get service where it was needed?
We've had some success where, and it's generally been private development, and it's been private development for industrial or commercial clients, where the private developer has paid the differential that was missing in the economic test. And we can do that with mechanisms so they get paid back as new loads come on. And so we can't assume that new load's going to happen until we have committed applications. But as that occurs, that disbursement can occur back. And so at the end of the day, the expansion is paid for by the people that utilize the gas that flows through that line, but it doesn't happen upfront. And so that's one way that we have had some success.
But you haven't had an instance where a municipality participated in the cost of providing service to an area in anticipation of bringing customers?
Not in my tenure. I've been with Chesapeake for a little over a year. And so there may be cases there. And we work with we have been working in my tenure with a number of different municipalities on trying to figure out a way and whether franchise fees can legally be used for expansion, or whether we've had a few municipalities look at projects and not bite, but look at projects to install the pipe ahead of the demand, you know, build it because you know it's coming, and then to deal with the transfer of costs at which time there's gas load. So we look for a number of options. We've met with the county engineer here in Sussex County to review where you're going to be sewering existing developments that would reduce the cost to put gas main in that helps that economic test. Right. And so we seek those opportunities, knowing when and where DLDOT's going to be repaved, or when water or sewer is going in are three of the things that we really seek to understand, as well as tracking new development so we can aggregate enough load to meet our economic test. But it's those things are challenges.
So you're saying that the developers sometimes will just front that cost?
Correct.
And then you reimburse them when you hook up? How does that work?
It's done different ways and different times, and so every situation is a little bit unique. But similar to in past life, you know, Tidewater, if you were the developer and you needed water, they'd build a water line that had twice the capacity that you needed. And so as the other developments come on and share in that cost, then you recoup some of that cost as the developer. Now that happens typically if you get new developments in the first 5 years or so, which is always the hope when you put a project together like that. But there are certainly ways that we can accommodate funding in that fashion. And so it's a piece that we are keenly aware of. We're keenly aware of in meeting with county officials and with every other municipal official. And it's a challenge for us when new load is at a distance from where we have existing gas main, or if we're trying to get gas main through established towns that don't have pipe systems in them already. And those are really our two most challenging spots. The last thing I would mention towards that end, that we seek assistance and support from municipalities, counties, when we are in front of the PSC. And so we are always looking. We attempted here in this last round with the PSC to update our tariff without success in a way to fund the gas main up front and move allocating some of the risk of that gas main extension to the municipality if growth didn't occur over the 6 years. The public advocate didn't like that process, and so we didn't move forward with that tariff offering. But we've got a working group going with the PSC to try to come up with alternate ways to expand natural gas when it doesn't work with our current framework. And so when we can find an idea that is attractive to the municipalities or the counties, we certainly seek your support, your vocal support in that, because it helps overcome the PSC is there to be our regulator, and so they are cognizant of protecting the public welfare, or the ratepayers, truly. And so having external support is helpful in those endeavors. So we've been talking a little bit about moving forward. we certainly look to continue our conversations with your planners, with your engineers, to understand what projects you have going on. We're very keen to follow your comp plan as it gets completed to understand where you are going to direct growth so we know where to direct our activities. We're cognizant that growth doesn't always occur exactly where you want it to occur, and so we will keep an eye on that. We look to the other funding mechanisms that come out, whether we can ever entice the SCU to help participate in gas main extensions through the money they have. We look to do that. Some of the other monies that we mentioned a minute ago, there are some opportunities out there. They do not exist like the SRF or USDA money does for water, wastewater, but we seek to find those that we can partner and expand and help serve county residents and businesses where there are. So. We spoke a little bit about this, supporting positive development, supporting efforts in front of the PSC. Also, if we end up with an initiative in front of the state legislature, we certainly seek municipalities and county support where it's an idea that is something that you feel like is fruitful. That was it. Any questions?
Anyone questions?
Thank you very much.
Listen, we thank you. I will just share one thing with you, more not necessarily a question, but we've identified four or five things that are important to anyone seeking to expand a business, okay, especially a manufacturing business. You know, they need high-speed internet. They need inexpensive electricity, natural gas, water, and sewer. Or actually sewer and water, probably in that order. Okay. Oddly enough, when we think about infrastructure, we think about water and sewer and roads.
Right.
You know, they're not a given, but they're not really the things that stop a deal necessarily. I mean, you have to have something. So I just want to encourage you to stay in conversation with the economic development folks at all levels. The idea of some type of partnership, I think everybody gets that somebody's got to pay for it. You can't just put, doesn't go in the ground for free. And I think everyone gets that. You know, but there has to be a way that we can plan for some of this, because if we don't plan for it, it won't happen, you know. And there is some truth to the notion that if you build it, they will come, as long as you build it smartly and in the right place and with all the elements that are needed to succeed. And that's the big one. You have to have all the elements you need to succeed. And this, we have an economic development expert with us today, and hopefully he'll confirm what I'm saying, but later on, but that's going to be the important thing. So thank you very much for showing up today and coming and giving your presentation. It's important to us. Please stay involved in our process.
We will. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, before Mr. Colton gets away, I'd like to give the commission a little bit of background. I'm Gene Byard, by the way.
Yeah, sure. Gene, you got to come to the microphone. You know the drill. Come on.
in one of my earlier lives, I serve on the board of Chesapeake Utilities, so okay. I've got a vested interest in what Mr. Holden was talking about. An example before Mr. Holden's time at Chesapeake of how the public-private sector works together is the extension of a gas main to Lewis, which was built for two customers, PB Hospital and the old Barcroft factory. I don't know when that line went in, Dean, but it's been
about five years ago.
A huge success. I don't know what you've got going now, but I believe there's an activity on 24. You might want to explain that to the commission, because I think that's going to be a growth area in the future. But the pharma BB experience has been uniformly positive. The savings, energy savings to both those places have been enormous.
Isn't that an example, too, where those two sort of major customers, I think that was that a negotiated
yes.
rate? But that also, did that supply natural gas availability for people along those lines in Lewis and the different city offices and everything else?
The mechanics are a little dicey, as Dean can tell you, trying to bring natural gas to old Lewis is kind of running down serious rabbit trails. I don't know where you can run gas lines in the small streets and all this. But it does work. Can you tell the commission a little bit about 24, what's going on?
Certainly. And so I'll circle back if I've got
Please
a minute
do.
Or
no,
two.
Go, no,
so,
no.
So with Lewis, we tagged together a poultry integrator, BB, and
Speak into the microphone.
A poultry integrator, SBI Pharma, and BB Hospital were the three anchor customers that made the economics work for that extension. And it was a long extension to get into Lewis. The benefit has been that we've been able to serve a few hundred residents in Lewis, and we're working to pick up now Pilottown Park and Pilottown Village and continue to move through Lewis. The newer developments are easier because they have a little more right-of-way room, and typically people, they still have people moving in, and so we get new connections that way. What Mr. Byard was speaking of is we're working very hard to figure out how to get across 24, both from the western side, from Mount Air. We have gas main to Mount Air's poultry process on 24. And we're bringing gas down now past the two Cape and Lopen schools into a development called Saddle Ridge, just on the east side of Love Creek. We're working very hard to figure out how to fill that area out with gas main. Okay. The challenge that we have is we've got a long way to go to get back to a high pressure main to bring gas in. We know that there's a lot of growth going on. It's a challenge to get all of those people to line up at the same time that is a magnitude sufficient to bring that gas main in. And so we are working through a number of different ways to make that extension happen. And working with Mr. Medlars is one of those, to find gas loads that we can help team, whether it's sewer, the sludge drying going into the wastewater treatment plant, and those types of items.
Right. Something else I would like to explain for the benefit of the commission and the public is what is the difficulty with giving gas service to people who live right next to a gas line or whose business is right next to a gas line? For instance, we have a line that runs all up and down Route 13, mm-hmm. yet businesses located on Route 13 can't get natural gas. Why is that?
I suspect it's the Eastern Shore high-pressure pipeline that is along 13. The Eastern Shore high-pressure pipeline runs from 600 to 400 PSI. It's a very high pressure. And so there's a notable amount of cost that has to go into, we call it a city gate, but it's what drops the pressure and meters that flow off of Eastern Shore's transmission line into a local network that businesses would connect to. And so it's a frustrating piece for a business that sits directly outside of and they see the markers for gas main. But it's a $300,000 connection charge to get a gas service.
Wow.
You know, I mean, a city gate with an extension might be less than that, but you would approach that cost. You know, you're where a individual service along a local distribution line might cost $1,200 to $2,000. And so it's the infrastructure that goes into that, which is the crux of getting enough right. mass, enough load to put one of those in. And so it's our business, and specifically the business that the task that I get tasked with, to how to make those economics work and how to line up enough load that the PSC won't come down on us for making that extension.
Well, these are the things that I think it's important for our economic development folks to understand, because these are the people that can help you put a critical mass together,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's why I think it's very important to stay in conversation with them and remind them that possibility exists, and what we're hoping, and I'm sure it's going to find its way into the plan, that there will be a mandate to encourage that kind of activity so that we can make some of these things happen.
Wonderful. A last piece that just jumped into my mind, and we don't, at the county or planning level, you don't always have the control over what DLDOT does with right-of-way and as roads are built, but having utility corridors, which is important for both extension, for force mains, and other county infrastructure is an important key. So where we can team to ensure that there's utility corridors, even if you're not putting utilities in it that day,
right.
is another important component. But I would say that the folks, Ms. Cornwell, Mr. Medlars, and Mr. Lawson, have all been very good to work with, and so we look to do nothing but expand mm-hmm. those efforts.
Okay. All right, thank you. Any other questions?
So, like on Route 24, I noticed that the new line that you're putting in is it looked like it was pretty much just off the shoulder or just off the ditch, off the shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
If if in, throughout the you know, the mobility as the state, you know, helps us correct some of the mobility issues, if in fact we were to widen, or you know, 24 was widened and it encroached over toward your gas line, does that mean you'd have to relocate it, or can it remain under a shoulder or under a paved road?
We prefer it to be under grass because it's easier to get to if you have an issue. But it can be under paving, and oftentimes when we're in a right of way like that, we do what DLDOT tells us to do. So we prefer grass. It doesn't have to move though, if there are reasons to not, we would consider keeping it under paving.
It'd be nice if we could all get together on 24 mm-hmm. and figure out where the road is going to be widened, if it is, mm-hmm. so that you could put it in one time at the right location.
Oh, certainly. I mean, we seek to. We have come to 24 at Plantations. We look to go east to get to 1. If the roadway behind BB and the new road connections occur there through to, was it Airport Road or something that's in there, you know, we look to find those alignments that we can get from A to B without going down the most congested built-up roads. But I agree wholeheartedly, you know, any time that we can team on identifying those efforts and understanding what DLDOT is actually going to do when is helpful for us.
Yeah, as I wrote down, you know, just recently, you know, the thought that came to my mind, mm-hmm. I'm sorry that you couldn't have put it about 30 feet further to the south.
Right.
So that, you know, we could try to work towards getting the mobility problems corrected. Because the more that we invest, the more that's invested, the harder it is to fix the first problem that we have.
Yeah, it's nice to put it in the ground right the first time around. You know, and if, you know, rail-to-trail projects come up, you know, gas main along rail-to-trails or something that's a viable pathway that we would seek as well.
Okay, anything else?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, who's next? Public comment. Anything and everything. Here we go. Okay, if you would sign in when you get up here and give us your name, and you may have the floor.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity and you guys holding this session, ladies. My name is Maria Payan. I do live in Sussex County, in Selbyville in particular. I am a consultant for a national nonprofit who has the Chesapeake, Delmarva region, as well as some South Central states. Something that I have been running into for quite a while now in all of them, and it's particularly starting to hit Sussex County now, is the intensity of what they call these no land farms. And I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with what I'm referring to. Okay, so we've been seeing over the past probably 2.5 years, I think it started.
What is a no land farm?
Well, this is, okay, so what a no land farm is, farming has been, firstly, let me tell you a little bit about Socially Responsible Agriculture Project is a nonprofit that supports family farming. And what we've seen happening in the past maybe 2.5 years on the Delmarva shoreline is this called a no land farm, which means farms traditionally here, always in Delmarva, have been a very important, you know, driver of economics. Poultry industry has been very important. Tourism has been very important down here, and we're running into some conflicts. A no land farm is basically where larger farms are being subdivided into smaller parcels. Usually these are not traditional in-state people. A lot of it is investors that are creating small parcels where they're putting in usually edge to edge on the property, sometimes 20 poultry houses, 650 feet long, sometimes 10, sometimes 12. In Accomack County right now, I have a 12 directly next to a 12, so that's 24 houses. It's taken on a whole new intensity because there is no land surrounding it. It's not like a traditional where you have 5 acres and 2 poultry houses. It has been causing havoc and war zones within the community because people are being impacted to the point when you are talking this many houses and this many birds, and without buffers around it, you know, farm fields in between where the housing and the small businesses are. And even the one we have now is Route 404, up from I can't think of the name of the church. I was just there last week.
Crossroads.
Thank you. I wanted to say Cornerstone, and I'm like, no, it's not Cornerstone. That's a very, very heavily used highway. It's a major thoroughfare for the beach traffic. It's two lanes. Right now they're proposing 8 poultry houses edge to edge on the property, and there are 2 small businesses. One is a family farmer who's been here for years and years and years. The other is, yeah, Fat Daddy's, exactly. And that's another small business. And there's questions with the highway safety there because they have a lot of accidents, from what I'm told there. When you have heavy trucks that are filled up and coming out onto a roadway, not off of a side road with no light, no stop sign, onto a major thoroughfare like that at 50, 55 miles an hour, there's concerns. The businesses are concerned, the residents are concerned, and I'm not sure what the answer is. There were some of the elected representatives, as well as one of the council members was out last week with the community, and they were talking about possibly doing like either a light industrial for these no land farms, which would take some of the intensity off of the regular AR zone. And again, I'm not sure what the answer is. I can just tell you what the problems that we're seeing and the conflicts. And I don't envy your jobs in trying to create this, but I think it's important that it's looked at because agriculture has changed tremendously since 50 years ago. And with this, it's causing, you know, some concerns. And again, I don't know the answer. Light industrial to me seemed like that's possibility to address it, but I don't know how you do that. So I'm going to leave that to you guys who
and ladies. One of the things that we're talking about in our non-development element is the creation of an agribusiness or an ag industrial zone or overlay. I'm not sure if we decide which we're going to do yet, but maybe a separate district would be the way to go to create that, you know, that category to help deal with some of these situations.
Right. And like I said, I'm not sure what the answer is. I just know that I have multiple people that are farms who are being impacted and worried about their business. And, you know, when they've been here for hundreds of years, and because a lot of this is investment, I know it's driving the farm prices up. I talked to a gentleman, Reed Angus, who's right here, and he was telling me they had a horrible time trying to find just because how this is driving the farm prices up because a lot of it's investment. So I'm not sure what the answer is, but I thought I would make you aware and leave it to you smart men and ladies to give some input.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, who's next? Going once. Okay, come on.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Rich Barrasso with Sarge, and no presentation today, but I did want to, my public comments are relative to the recent article in the Cape Gazette. The article was Friday, and the headline was Sussex Ordinance Updates Drainage Construction Regs. And I'm here just to say thanks to the efforts of Hans Medlars, his work group, and obviously you, in terms of updating the ordinances. I think it's a big step forward in an issue that many people have been concerned about over the past couple of years. So thanks for your effort.
Thank you. Thank you for noticing. I think it's one of the best pieces of ordinance work that's been done in years. And it worked because all the stakeholders had mm-hmm. a say in how it was done. And that's why I think it's such a successful piece of legislation.
Good work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, who's next? All right, that appears to be it for the morning session. Oh, well, wait a minute.
No, I don't want to take up the public's time, so if anybody wants to comment, just boot me. No, I just wanted to respond to some of the comments this morning.
And your name is?
So my name is Josh Thomas again with DelDOT.
Okay.
So, keep you on track. No, I just wanted to say something for the benefit of the commission and for the benefit of the public. Just to kind of reiterate that, you know, DelDOT feels like this is the county's plan. But, you know, we're consistently trying to be here just to make sure that, you know, that we're being partners in the plan. But I just want to make a comment because if I don't respond to something that we had a couple mobility kind of topics come up this morning.
Yeah, come on.
But no, I just want to let you know that, you know, we feel like this is your plan. And so we sort of want to comment if you have specific questions. But we don't want to just be butting in on every conversation. I don't want you to feel like we're being a sort of a silent partner. But at the same time, we feel like, you know, we want you guys to shape the direction, and we want to be there to support you every step of the way. I actually think you answered the TID question very well earlier, in the sense of, you know, we're in some cases like 4 to 5 years out on any of these grade separated intersection projects. So we're sort of looking both long term and sort of, you know, near and midterm. But I think you answered the question really well when you're talking about. You have to have broad support for the TIDs, but also, since this is such a new thing for us, you know, it's our belief that we should have some success stories before we start applying the same model everywhere. So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with that and saying that we're talking about the Henlopen TID. We're not far enough along yet to say, okay, let's apply that same model everywhere. You know, let's have some success before we keep going forward with it. So, like I said, I'm just really making a general comment about, you know, us being here to support you, but we don't want to just butt in and every chance we have. So, if you have questions, certainly call me up and we'll attempt.
As you know, DelDOT's one of our favorite whipping boys.
Exactly. Yeah, that's why I kind of keep ducking a little.
But that being said, you know that we know that you're an integral part of what we're doing, and we're glad you're here, and we appreciate you coming to every meeting. And just for the benefit of the public, I want you to know that the DelDOT folks have been represented at virtually every meeting we've had. They're here to answer questions. We have an element in our plan called intergovernmental coordination. Okay. This is it. What you're seeing right now, this is it. And that's why it's important for everybody to know what everybody else is thinking. It is indeed the county's plan. It's our mission to come up with a plan. And it doesn't necessarily follow whatever DelDOT's plan is, nor does their plan necessarily follow ours. That's why we're all here together to try to figure out a way to make these things happen. In a way that works with everyone. So I'm going to tell you right now, if you've got a comment or something to say, jump up and say it, for heaven's sakes. Don't feel like you're stepping on anybody's toes or anything. It's important information. We might as well know now instead of finding out later after we've already done something.
Yeah, you answered the question well. I mean, I think we're essentially just trying to align all of our efforts, you know, make sure we're on the same page, and that's what we're trying to do. Just a couple quick things. You mentioned SR1 and 16. So we're looking at construction of that in fiscal year 21, so essentially about 3 calendar years out.
Right.
You know, so we're still a little far off from that, but obviously, you know, we've got time to make sure that, you know, we're aligned there. And then you talked about SR24.
Yeah.
I believe it was Commissioner Hopkins here that said we're talking about where we're going to do widening, and obviously we've provided those maps for you, and we can discuss it more as we get into mobility specifically. But we're talking about essentially widening to Mulberry Knoll, and then from Mulberry Knoll to Love Creek will be road improvements to handle the transition to the four lane section. So. Just in case you had any more questions about that, that's sort of the extent of what we're talking about.
Right. Well, in regard to 16 and Route 1, Mr. Kenton is still here. And if you guys want to have a side conversation about that, I would encourage you to do it. Because it is important that no one gets gets shut out by any kind of development, the roadway improvement that takes place there. And I think that was Mr. Kenton's concern, was he is for all the property owners in that area to make sure that they still have some reasonable access to a public road and the ability to direct a development to the obvious places that it should be, which would be near, you know, major opportunities to get on and off a highway quickly and safely. So, you know, I think that's what the concern was. But he's still here. I'm sure he'd be happy to have a chat with you.
Of course, yeah. Well, because the other point I have to make, and this is an obvious thing, I'm sort of stating the obvious, but I mean, DelDOT's a big machine. You know, I don't have the answers to all these questions, but essentially, we're here to get you guys plugged into, okay, if we have a specific issue related to one of our projects or how it affects the comp plan, then let's tackle that and get the people that need to be involved.
Great.
In those conversations. So,
okay.
You need me to sign in?
I think, I think we know who you are.
That's what I said.
Mr. Hopkins, maybe you have a question.
Sure.
So, Josh, I've heard on the Henlopen TID, I heard that there's like a draft or a tentative budget of something, $300 to $400 million. But I didn't hear that direct. Is there a budget for the Henlopen TID?
We're not at that point yet.
Oh, so there's
We're still talking. We don't even have an agreement yet. You know, you touched on it a little bit earlier that essentially, you know, the TID is something that you have to tackle with all the parties of this district, of this agreement. We're not even at the point yet where we're talking about an agreement. We're talking about, you know, so far what we've presented to the county is a existing conditions analysis where we look at the way everything is currently. And of course the county's agreed to move forward with the path we have now. But we haven't even outlined service standards or anything like that. So I can't comment on, I haven't heard anything about specific numbers. If any of those numbers would have been rough estimates.
So when Cohen was here or before the county council or, you know, made a statement, she didn't reference a $300 to $400 million.
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. So I didn't hear it direct. So.
Right. No, I just mean I'm not aware of it. But
here's where I would be headed with that. I would just be interested to see how that would be broken down. Like I'd Google for it the other day and print it out, you know, the TID transportation improvement.
District
improvement, which is didn't talk about how the potential developers would potentially invest. It just gave me the overview. Now I know there's like 65 miles or whatever, and there's a central piece and then a peripheral piece, and mm-hmm. So it just kind of it's good for the lane. It was good for me as a layman just trying to understand at least where it is, and you know there's 60 some intersections, and so the whatever the total value is of the cost would be obviously is going to be broken down into, you know, linear feet of roadway and intersections, and you know, and then from there. I would just be interested if there is a tentative budget, you know, how that money is broken down, like between, like each intersection has a current value based on something, you know, traffic counts or something, and it's going to be impacted based on current, you know, future zoning, and then the development that would follow behind that. And I was just interested to see, you know, see that breakdown.
And I'm not saying that there isn't a discussion of those answers. I don't know them well enough to speak, you know, in an educated manner about where those numbers are coming from, because we're not far enough along in that process to where, you know, because the boundary has to be set by the agreement, and then the plan for that has to say which improvements are anticipated based on the forecast. Right, of what improvements are going to be needed.
Yeah.
There's that total cost, and then there is the cost sharing percentage between the developers and DelDOT. So essentially, it's far out. We're not at that point yet, but I think obviously once we have specific discussions about mobility and that element, we'll definitely try to have TID experts here. You know, it's not just going to be me. We're going to have the team here. Because there's a lot of different pieces to this as well. So, but yeah, I mean, if there is a number like that, I don't know where it came from, and I don't want to speak to it.
I mean, because it would be nice for some of us to even look at it and say, okay, you know, we think the priority is first to widen 24, for example. And so, you know, can we take some of the monies that we have for, you know, making changes to certain intersections, put that over here, and be able to get
right,
people.
Right, and that is the that is essentially, you know, the reason why you would do a TID, so it's not piecemeal. So you would be able to say, well, let's do capital planning within this, and we'd be able to move resources around based on what's most beneficial. So I mean, you're on the, you know, we're on the right track. It's just in the development of the district, we're just not at that point where we're doing that. Anything now is sort of conceptual.
So. Just the sooner that we can relieve a little bit of pressure on some of these roads,
of course,
you know, a lot of the aggravation is going to be mitigated. Thanks.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
It's going to be a process. I would suspect the land use plan will be done before the PID.
But it would be helpful to know what the economics of it are, because if it's a non-starter for developers,
you need to be talking about it. And I'm wondering, Keller, if that number got thrown out by somebody as in an effort to try to give somebody an idea of what the scope is, what the scope of it is. Well, it could be that too, but it's at this point it all remains to be seen, because it's just hasn't been sorted out yet. But I think to the extent that it finds its way into the land use plan, I think it's going to be more of just an acknowledging it, that it's something that needs to be looked at and determined whether or not to do it, not necessarily how or what it's all going to be, because it's, you know, we're at a higher level.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, no, that's true.
And just so you know, all of those, the improvements will be determined based on forecasting, based on models that haven't even been run yet.
Right.
So there won't be a number for quite some time, because we have to do a little bit of forecasting, and then Delta has to run their models.
And I rather suspect that that's going to be the subject of some pretty serious debate as to how those models are constructed. You know, some of that debate is going on right now, in surrounding the TID. So it's going to be a process, that's for sure. Okay, who's next? Anyone else from the public would like to speak before we move on to the rest of our agenda? All right, then we're going to move on to our next item. But for anyone who wants to, there'll be another opportunity to speak at around 1:30 today. So, economic development.